Hello and welcome to Graphic Novel Life, the podcast passionate about recommending graphic novels for those reading them for the first time and looking for a place to start. Or if you're a long-time reader, we might have something new you might like to try. Whatever your age or preference, we aim to have something for you. I'm your host, Jamie, here to help you explore the growing phenomenon that is graphic novels and help you extend your horizons. Today on the show, we're looking at a defining series published by Image Comics, written by Ed Brubaker and illustrated by Sean Phillips. It's been around for a while, but I rate Fatale as an excellent series, especially if you love your crime hard-boiled and just a little spooky. But before we get to that, as usual, head over to my good friends at the Slings and Arrows Graphic Novel Review Guide at www.theslingsandarrows.com. With over 6,000 independent reviews of every genre and graphic novel published in English, it is the most comprehensive guide to graphic novels, old and new, on the web. Alternatively, follow them on Twitter or Facebook for daily reviews. Now, you know what time it is. It's time for the show. The original idea for Fatale was a 12-issue series, which instead turned into 5 books. Penned by Ed Brubaker and illustrated by artist Sean Phillips, it has all the elements of good crime noir: a tragic male, bleak setting, and a leading dame who needs protection from the stronger males. Except that's where the twist is. Any male who becomes involved with this leading dame tends to see his life disappear into a chasm of ill fortune at full throttle, drawn inexplicably into a world that is not all it seems. Fatale centers around the two primary characters of the beautiful Josephine and Nicholas Lash, a man who fascinated by her, in a complex cycle of life, sex, tragedy, and death set across different timelines that begins with the first volume, Death Chases Me. Now, at the funeral of his godfather, Dominic Hank Rains, Nicholas Lash meets Josephine, a woman claiming to be the granddaughter of an old acquaintance of Rains, here to pay her respects. She bears an uncanny resemblance to a photo of Rains with someone she claims is her grandmother. When she rescues him from strange thugs, Nicholas's life is dramatically altered. Flashing back to the mid-1950s, Brubaker supplies a wonderfully congruent story as bleak and gripping as the best noir. It twists and turns as we meet a young Rains who becomes involved with a mysterious and enigmatic young woman named Josephine, thrown into a world beyond his imagination and on a collision with Joe's lover, Detective Walt Booker. Brubaker's script packs in tragedy, betrayal, and dark mysteries that play on conspiracy theories and tales of dark orders willing to pay for immortality and power and blood. This is classic noir with a dark, supernatural edge, an edge that is gradually revealed in a way that makes you wonder if you really saw what you think you just saw. It's a technique used often in film, but it's employed so masterfully here with the help of Phillips' absolutely superb artistic renderings. The attention to detail is very good, with the characters in the foreground, the colors smudged to blend with the dark shading and set some bleak settings. It's apparent that there is something mysteriously dangerous about Josephine and this world she inhabits, the shadows alluding to a dark side we initially see glimpses of. When the horrors do arrive, it is short and sharp, and utterly terrifying. Phillips is masterful, adding an unsettling level that is simultaneously draws inspiration from and pays homage to the noir genre as a whole. In the second book, The Devil's Business, Nicholas Lash sets out to uncover more about Josephine and her connection with his godfather Hank Rains, yet he's hunted by the men who attacked his house and forced him off-grid. Who is this woman with power to make men do whatever she wants, and why does Nicholas have memories of meeting her when he was a boy? Then it flashes back to the mid-1970s, where B-movie actor Miles rescues his former flame, Susan, from the Method Church, taking refuge in the Los Angeles house where Josephine has become a recluse after the events of Death Chases Me. Hansel, the leader of the sinister Method Church, is searching for Susan, and she witnesses something she was not meant to see and discovers Josephine, making it apparent that it might not only be Josephine who is destined to experience a repeating cycle of death and reincarnation. It's at this point that Brubaker suggests that this is something eternal, an ancient struggle between good and evil stretching back to the beginning of time. Philip Zahr, again, bleak and beautiful, emphasizing Brubaker's fractured characters. Nicholas is a man obsessed, portrayed as anxious and disheveled, while Josephine's beauty hides her sadistic voyeurism, her deep self-loathing, and the guilt she feels for the tragedy she leaves in her wake, before it is all swiftly overridden by her own sense of self-preservation. I mean, those characters sound amazing, and they are brilliantly crafted, so complex. While most of Fatale is set within the fairly recent modern timeline, the third book, West of Hell, takes a slightly different path, collecting four short stories that explain Josephine's origins. And it looks back through time to not only her past, but that of other women like her in events set long before Death Chases Me. Now, in the case of Alfred Ravenscroft, which is set in 1936, it's relatively early in Josephine's story, and she's learning more about her powers and how to control them. In an effort to do so, she visits Alfred Ravenscroft, a pulp writer, to discover more about one of his earlier stories that is so similar to her own experiences. A Lovely Sort of Death travels back to medieval France in 1286, introducing us to Matilda, who bears an uncanny resemblance to Josephine and avoids society because of the power she has over people. Well, that and the fact that people have a tendency to try and kill her after a while. In Down the Darkest Trail, we go back across the Atlantic to the Old West of 1883. Now, Black Bonnie is an outlaw, again the Josephine likeness, controlling a band of male followers until she meets bounty hunter Milkfed and Professor Waldo Smythe, an expert on the arcane cult that hunts Bonnie. It's a good Western yarn. It's not what you think, so don't be put off by the names of the characters involved in this. There's a lot more to it than meets the eye. And Milkfed and Smythe are incredibly interesting characters themselves, adding another dynamic that's explored over the next two volumes. Just a glance away, the final story jumps forward to Romania in 1943 during World War II to tie into the first book. And here we learn how Josephine met Walt Booker as they encounter the Thule Society, which was a Nazi regiment collecting arcane artifacts for Hitler while furthering their own agenda. It clears up details hanging from Death Chases Me, and it just displays Brubaker's ability to interconnect his plot lines, which is important to remember in this whole series, that there's so many threads cutting through, and they'll, in the final volume, things are tied up from the first volume or the second volume. You know, any of those volumes are going to tie into each other. By the time we hit Pray for Rain, we're flashing back to the Seattle grunge scene of 1995. Musician and frontman Lance does something colossally risky and stupid to fund a video for his band's new single, stumbling onto a naked and amnesiac Josephine in the process. He takes her back to the band's mansion, but unfortunately for Lance, Josephine isn't all she seems. And a man with a deadly obsession is hunting Joe, and there's an absolutely brutal cliffhanger at the end of this. In the final book, Curse the Demon, we open with a quote by Nietzsche that perfectly sums up the entire cycle Fatale revolves around. Just when you think Fatal couldn't possibly become more tragic, Brubaker and Phillips have the misery dripping off the page with heart-rending revelations. It is brutal. Repeated over and over again, I know, but that's the best word to explain it. Phillips' art is still absolutely awesome to behold, but it switches to a slightly more trippy presentation as the cosmos folds and unfolds before flipping back to the dark noir landscapes that have cemented the series. If you've followed any of Phillips' work over the years, especially in Hellblazer, in the early days of that with Jaime Delano, this is brilliant. That you will know what to expect. It makes Curse the Demon the darkest and broodiest tale yet. But despite the bleakness, the strength of the plot just compels you to keep reading. It's a fantastic series, but that doesn't mean it is perfect. A number of the characters are purposely enigmatic, especially the antagonists, which means sometimes you're scratching your head by the end wondering what just happened. The nature of the deadly cycle that comprises Fatal is an unexplainable mystery that the creators never planned to resolve, and since the series is both a noir and supernatural thriller, it is not happy stuff. It both combine and it makes quite a strong emotional heft. In my opinion, it makes Scandi Noir look positively cheerful. Whether you will ultimately like it or not is up to you, but the best way to find out is by reading it. And I do highly recommend it, but don't be surprised if, despite that, the words and pictures stay with you on many levels for a while. That's how well it's written, and that's how well it is illustrated. It is absolutely fantastic stuff. The supernatural world layered on the natural is something other writers and artists have explored. Mainstream comics publishers often flirt with it, if you think of Hellblazer, Swamp Thing, anything like that. But the horror and tension is almost always undercut with humor. Now, the difference with Fatal is that Brubaker and Phillips take that supernatural world and apply the basic principles of crime noir. Now, according to Wikipedia, the hallmarks of crime noir are that the protagonist is not a detective, but instead either a victim, a suspect, or a perpetrator. Other common characteristics include a self-destructive protagonist. A typical protagonist of noir fiction is dealing with the legal, political, or other system, which is no less corrupt than the perpetrator, by whom the protagonist is either victimized and or has to victimize others on a daily basis, leading to a lose-lose situation. Now, that has been applied in areas to create subgenres like American noir, Tartar noir, which is Scottish, and Scandi noir, which is the Scandinavian. Now, Brubaker and Phillips are not content to produce a hard-boiled noir story, but seemingly create or at least define a new section, supernatural noir. Now, the violence is as gritty and grimy as the story itself, with all the compelling character developments and complex morality that noir has in its narrative. It is utterly cheerless in both Brubaker's scripting and Phillips' art. It's bleak, tense, dark, and desperate, but boy, does it ever sweep you off your feet and drag you along. Brubaker and Phillips' tactic of switching perspectives between Josephine and other cast players over different eras is genius, creating very broken individuals willing to use others for their own gain, even as the protagonists, and they're barely more honorable than their foes. It's like a game of survival, and I think that's what noir plays on. Joe especially will stoop to using the same manipulations her oppressors would in a bid to be free from what is a sinister adversary. Now, that it, as I've said already, that it remains completely riveting and equally heartbreaking is a testament to the writing skills of Brubaker and the artistic talents of Sean Phillips that it makes it so real and relevant. When Death Chases Me came out, it garnered positive critical praise, was nominated for Eisner Award, a number of Eisner Awards, both Brubaker and Phillips. In the end, it was actually colorist Dave Stewart who won the Eisner Award for the best coloring, which was only the 8th time he had received it. Last time I checked, he'd won it 9 times, but he may very well have won it again. Elizabeth Breitweiser took over from Stewart in West of Hell, and her work was notably different, but it still enhanced the angst and misery Brubaker and Phillips cultivated throughout the series. I mean, she's gone on to be a long-term partner in that, being credited as well on their new books. They're a very, very good team together. And part of what Brubaker and Phillips' work on Fratelli actually led to being groundbreaking was that Image Comics, who has itself always been proud of being creator-driven, coming up with new ideas, even they gave them an unprecedented deal to work exclusively for the company over 5 years, and in return Image gave them free rein to create whatever they wanted with total control over their own projects, also handing them absolute creative ownership over all projects, old and new. I mean, that's how good Fatale is. It set the bar long before Brian Michael Bendis came to DC and got that lucrative deal where he could do the same thing and bring his own creative own stuff and be able to put it in and out of the universe as he wanted and have free reign. It set a standard that has since been followed, and they've created other works after that. You know, Criminal is just one of the series that they've created in the wake of Fatale. But Fatale was the standard, and I think it can very easily still be held like that. Now, if you want to get Fatale, you can get it on Amazon. Though, having looked around to try and get you folks the best deal and point you in the best direction, the digital versions, and I know this is a bit offensive to some people to consider digital versions, but the ones in Comixology are considerably cheaper for the most part than anywhere else I've seen. Now, there are, if you want to collect them, and if you like to collect books, I would recommend getting the two deluxe editions that collect all the stories. They're nice hard covers, and the paper is good quality, and they're good to have on the shelf, but they're also good to read if you want. So I recommend those if that's a route you're thinking of going down. Sadly, that's the end of the show for today. A big thank you for listening, as always. I love working on Graphic Novel Life. I really look forward to coming and just talking geekery with all my listeners, old and new. If you like the show, please don't forget to click the subscribe button, and please recommend it to your friends. Graphic Novel Life is available across a number of platforms, including Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google, and you can follow me on Twitter at Graphic Novel Lif, LIFF, for updates and written reviews that I also do from the slingsandarrows.com. I post all my reviews there as well, so you can read that and then go over to Slings and Arrows and help those guys out. I mean, we do it for free. We're not getting paid for this. We do it because we love the genre, we love the art, and that's that. thank you very much again for listening. It's amazing to see how many people are starting to listen to Graphic Novel Life, and I really look forward to our next episode. So until next time, we'll see you then. Thank you.